It's Friday, January 30th, 2015, and welcome to episode 173 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And right off the top today, I guess we'll share some sad news. Mike's going to be leaving us.
What? It just won't be the same.
It won't be.
Mike's
taking another position at another university, so he'll certainly be missed. But we certainly wish him well, and this is kind of going to be his last episode, although we have invited him possibly remotely in the future.
Guest session here and there.
So today, what we've got lined up for you is kind of a thank you segment for all the technology support people out there that have put in some very hard work over the holidays, something that I'm calling the Invisible Tech Support segment. And then we'll have our last security spotlight with Mike. So Mike will share some summaries, I guess.
Yeah,
Reflections of Tech Talk for Teachers. We'll be able to get along. And like I said, Mike's just not too far away. And of course, he can always be reached electronically. And then we'll finish up. Cindy, I think we've got some tech picks.
Right. Just some one of those, like I said, born out of necessity. One of the things that I discovered that I was working on recently. And it was kind of one of those aha moments.
Okay. So we've got a lot to share with you this time. So sit back and enjoy. And here we go.
Here we go.
Up first today, I thought we would start with what I'm calling the Invisible Tech Support segment. And this is kind of an outreach to kind of thank all of the technology support people all across the nation and that for that matter internationally. As we go through the holiday seasons, there is a lot of tech work and maintenance and upgrades and things that occur over the holiday break. And if you listen to our last Tech Talk for Teachers, which, by the way, that was the middle of December, we recorded that, so it's been forever since we've done an episode.
6 weeks, wow.
And it's been a while.
That's why I feel so
Yeah, it's
long.
Been a while.
Yeah.
Missed you guys.
Yeah.
I thought we, like, skipped a month or something.
We had a two-day scheduled outage, which is highly unusual that you would ever schedule that much time.
Right.
However, it was for our core networking router infrastructure, which is kind of the main gateway out of EIU to the rest of the world. And I believe that equipment was like purchased in 2004. So
right, yeah, it was about 10 years old. So it was a matter of time.
Yeah, so, you know, like a dog years every 7 years, tech years, what, every 10 years or something?
Yeah.
So that's like a 100-year-old router.
That was one of those things is like, oh, God, if the power goes out in the building, is it going to come back?
Right. You know, and it was also a very expensive piece of equipment. So they scheduled that December 29th and 30th, ITS did. It went very, very well. You know, we had that planned very well. It was communicated very well. Of course, no, not everybody likes hearing that news that we were down, but it was necessary. We had to bring all the systems down and then bring them back up in order. Yes, there was a possibility that we could leave things up, but, you know, having things shut down in an orderly fashion is always
right,
preferable.
Yeah, it would have been, I mean, there's failovers. But the equipment was so old, like we could have put in the new equipment, turn it on, and if it didn't work, it would have failed over to the old system. But that going from new to old is never
right.
a good idea. And then if the failover didn't work correctly, we would have lost equipment in a not clean way,
right.
which is always very, very risky to have data loss.
And unfortunately, in an ideal world, you know, we would have redundant systems and things, but just the cost issues and things for some of this. That's always something that we're looking at. But, you know, it's always, always a trade-off. You know, we'd love to have redundant data centers, you know, and fiber between things.
Right. But, I mean, again, in the end, I mean, what is the impact to the organization to be down 2 days
right.
in actuality? Yeah, you know, it's going to affect people and it's going to be different, but how big is the impact?
You right.
know, it's not like critical systems, like we need to, you know, keep aircraft in the air or, you know,
right.
things like that.
Surgery systems in hospitals.
Yeah, you know, life support systems or anything like that.
But honestly, a lot of students and faculty didn't even, because a lot of them were gone for break already. And
right.
so they,
that's why it was scheduled.
They were
the
oblivious
it
that it even happened.
Yep. And that's exactly why it's the way it was. I mean, and, you know, we got some of the shocking parts of it is that some people thought maybe we should do it on Christmas Day. because right. that would have been the most minimal impact. But it's like, well, okay,
who's going to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can tell the workers to come in those days, but
right.
how bad does that affect morale?
Right.
And then you always want to have the vendor on call
yeah.
in case you do have issues with the install. Yeah.
Holiday support at triple the rate.
Yeah,
which well, is already
actually it doesn't with. Even for these vendors we had for this equipment. They didn't. There was no support on that day.
Yeah, they just said
you know, they don't. It was a big. Yeah. It was a big so, fat no. You know.
Right. Yeah. Right. So it was scheduled. Things went well. I mean, I was extremely happy. It was scheduled for 2 days. By the end that evening, the systems were back up, and they were bringing systems up through the rest of the night into the next day. But the main portion of it, you know, lasted about 6 to 8 hours, and we were back up. Which is, like I said, kudos to all the folks, especially the networking folks in ITS that were working over the holiday, and then also out in K-12 land, a lot of upgrades and things. I've got a lot of friends in the K-12 tech support area. And everything from, you know, like lunch program upgrades, school bus schedules, accelerated reader, accelerated mm-hmm. math, the park testing, the student information systems, safety alarms, security alarms, all of that kind of rolls through an IT tech support arm. And, you know, there are just many, many people. You know, hopefully yeah, those of us in tech support got a little bit of time away to enjoy family and everything because that's important to get that break. But, again, you know, they don't often get that thank you for doing everything that you do. It's, as I said, it's invisible tech support, and that's the way that we like to have it.
Right.
We don't want to be out there being noticed when something's going wrong, so we work very, very hard behind the scenes to make sure all the equipment is operational and, you know, where we can do the redundancy and minimize impact anytime these maintenance windows are necessary. So thank you all for all the tech support, and we hope you had a very happy holiday. Up next is our security spotlight, and we have some sad news during this segment. Mike, who's been with us for many episodes now, but Mike's going to be taking a new position, so he's going to be leaving EIU, and he's going to be missed. So.
Very much.
But we want to certainly wish him well on to new and exciting things, I'm sure. So we'll let Mike speak a little bit. And also as a parting episode here, since this is the last security spotlight with Mike, thought if you could just kind of summarize some of the things that we talk about every time we do a Tech Talk for Teachers podcast. And some teachers may worry, well, that doesn't affect me or anything, but it certainly affects everybody. So we're just trying to raise the awareness of how to be safe out on the internet. So turn it over to you, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, just kind of reflecting back on all the different episodes, and it's pretty interesting because I think it was earlier this week was Data Privacy,
mm-hmm.
National Data Privacy Day. And I think that's kind of one of the big pillars of information security is data privacy. And 2014 was a really big year about privacy, with especially everything
breach after breach.
Right.
And I guess this is a little before 2014, but the stuff the NSA was doing, and you know, even on the government level, how important that is. All the tech companies trying to move more towards privacy and security of, you know, just Gmail and your email platforms with the encryption and stuff. And
well, so much of that used to be very specialized populations, and really your techies or your business or your financial
right.
people. And it like just seems like in the last year it's mainstream. It's
right.
that all of us are talking
about. Yeah,
it's
a major topic of news
right.
almost every week. There's
yeah.
something.
Yeah, in my case, that's good.
job security.
Job security. And this is, you're seeing this is very apparent with the fact that I am leaving, is the fact that it is so new, it is so prevalent. A lot of organizations and stuff are now are like, what's our security posture? And it's, we don't have anything. And it's like, oh my God, we need something. So it helps, you know, personally on a professional level.
High demand area right,
right
now.
So it helps that, especially for me, that, you know, not tooting my own horn, but we're pretty well established here. Our security program is pretty, it's been around for a
while. There's been some thought put in, as you said, that's more than a lot of places.
Right. And, you know, I'm the second one in this position, the second person has been in this position here at Eastern. And my predecessors, you know, laid a lot of the groundwork and footing a while back. And insecurity was talked about before that here. So that's very good that Eastern has been kind of in the forefront of this, especially in higher ed. Higher ed's lacking overall compared
to... And K-12 is as well.
Yeah, I imagine it's probably maybe even worse.
Yeah.
Your small towns and stuff can't afford the IT.
The benefit here we have is that we have an IT department.
Right.
In some of the small schools around here, one person is the IT department.
Right.
So,
I think we're going to start seeing, and hopefully... I talk about job security, that's great, but one of our big models, and it's kind of my motto we talked about, that it's everyone's responsibility. Security is everyone's responsibility. Everyone needs to think in a security mindset. And I think with things like that have been happening and how it is becoming so mainstream, people are more aware of, okay, this person doesn't need my social security number. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And then it turned into, why are you asking for my social security
right,
number?
All the phishing attempts.
Yeah, and now it's like, well, you don't need it, and you're a scam. And people are starting to identify that. And we've really seen that at Eastern as well.
Right. Which is one reason that we spotlight it here on our podcast and things, just to get that word out. And if we can just prevent one click or something, people don't realize the amount
right.
of work that goes on after the fact. And that end user may not be seeing that, but certainly, you know, in the IT departments, there's a lot of cleanup work to happen.
And back to, you know, with your whole hidden maintenance portion, that applies to well in security. There's a lot of work that goes behind the scenes with the maintenance groups and stuff in the IT department, outside the security department, in the event of a security issue. You know, our department's pretty small relative compared to other universities, but it's bigger than others. We're kind of in the middle, I would say. But when we have an a security issue, we have to rely on the regular people working in IT to help with that. So there's some of that hidden maintenance that most people don't even realize, except for in the security timeline, it's usually impactful. It's usually happening when you least want it to happen. it's happening on weekends when maybe your users aren't solely affected, but again, now your IT people are coming in on weekends, and
right.
then, oh,
or
by
two
the
or
way,
3 o'clock in the morning,
right? Which in higher ed, that's impactful to students. So
yeah,
that's kind of the recap, you know, and just kind of summarize everything. You know, it's protecting the data, and it's everyone's responsibility. Are you backing up things? Do you know where your data is? Are you protecting it at the good level? Are you using passwords? Are you using strong passwords? So it all kind of
changed your password
right,
lately.
Yeah, it all kind of ties in. But again, it's you're strong security in the security chain, and it's really just a chain. The weakest part is the weakest link. So if any of that's weak, that's
right.
where the hackers are going to go.
And like I said, the awareness, I think we've done a good job on this podcast highlighting some of that. And since it is made the mainstream or has made the mainstream news, you know, malware and ransomware and then the encryption threat right now,
right.
the backups are just so important. And, you know, you're only as good as that last backup if, you know, catastrophe would happen out there. So, I mean, it's something that's not fun to do, but something that we need to be thinking about. So to summarize, make sure that you always have a backup, a recent backup. You're only as good as that last backup. Make sure that you can keep your computer and devices up to date with the latest operating system patches. Make sure that you're smart about phishing attempts and, you know, don't click on links that you're not familiar with and things. That causes a lot of problems. Be careful of the general phishing and malware attempts. And, you know, as far as in personal type things, with all the credit card fraud and things out there as well, you know, keep an eye on those statements and report that immediately so the credit bureaus and things can go out there and, you know, investigate the fraud charges and things like that. So, Mike, you know, we're certainly going to miss you. We wish you the best in your new endeavors. And, you know, I threw out the invitation. If once you get settled in, we might do something remotely every now and then to see how things are going.
See how that works and see what I got there for any place.
So thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much for all your contributions.
Fun.
For my technology pick of the week this week, I'd like to give an update. Last time I mentioned that I was in the market for a Bluetooth mouse, so received one over Christmas break, and I like this one very much. I've been using it with my Surface Pro, but my curiosity also got the best of me. There are some new devices out there, and one that I just literally got a couple of days ago that I'm doing some testing and things is the new Toshiba Encore 2 Write tablet. And one of the reasons that this one interests me, one, it was a very affordable price. The 8-inch model is around $349. And secondly, and most importantly for me, it has a digital pen.
Uh-oh. Look out.
Watch out, OneNote. Here I come. So I'm liking this device. I'm just trying it out, just kind of seeing. And one of the reasons that I – actually, the main reason that I wanted this was my wife has a Kindle Fire reader, mm-hmm. e-book reader, and she's always using it, so I can't read my e-books. So I was looking for a device that would be in a form factor, so I installed the Kindle app. And, of course, we have all the Kindle books and things. And this – one-handed, I mean,
a big enough screen that you can read easily.
Yeah, and
I'm not saying you're old or anything. I'm just
I need a bigger screen, and that's one thing. Actually, using her Kindle Fire, it's a little bit smaller. I think it's 6-inch, the newer Kindle model, and that's really is too small. So this one's 16:9 format, so you can either turn it sideways or in portrait mode, reading, and then adjust that font size as required. Also does Miracast for those that are interested in doing the wireless video. I'm very pleased with it. Like I said, it's brand new, just a couple of days with it, but I have it working with the Roku 3. You can actually broadcast this wirelessly to your TV if you have a Roku 3. Nice. There's a beta Miracast app out there. It's working with our Netgear PTV 3000, which is kind of a checkout kit that we have that will make any one of our technology-enhanced classrooms wireless, as long as they have a Miracast-capable device. And then it also works with the Screen Beam. So
is it a full operating system?
Yes, full Windows 8.1. It's the Atom processor, the latest Atom chip, 2 gigabytes of RAM. That's the other reason I've been holding off, because there's like Windows tablets like $99 now, but they have the 1 gigabyte of RAM. And to me, that's very frustrating. They cripple it, essentially.
Does it have smart card or anything like that capabilities?
Mm-hmm. You're familiar with one of these. Sorry, audience, audio podcast.
Oh, yeah,
here.
The micro?
Yeah, a little micro SD mm-hmm. card. So I've got a 64-gigabyte one. It just fits right here in the side.
Nice.
In fact, and again, this is kind of an educational experiment. And going back to our networking conversation from earlier, this isn't all magic. There's a lot of engineering and things behind this. But on that little micro SD card, I have a 16 gigabyte, which is a very small one. You can get 64 gigabytes for like $10 now. But I loaded every episode of Tech Talk for Teachers podcast and every episode of our YouTube channel videos.
Nice.
And it fit all on a 16 gigabyte card. What that would mean, and it doesn't have to be, our Tech Talk for Teachers or whatever, but if you were a student in K-12 taking a bus trip or something, imagine being able to provide, a little bitty SD card the size of your fingernail,
right,
putting on 100 hours worth of content, hopefully educational content, and then, not having to rely, on a wireless network or worried about your broadband speeds and things. That's the other thing I constantly struggle with at home. I'm kind of spoiled here at the university because we have high broadband speeds,
right?
And it's not the case when I go home.
Nope, my house either.
So anytime
folk.
That's right.
Yep.
Out in the middle of the corn and bean fields,
that's right,
the internet reception's not so good. I think we're running, I just did a speed test the other day, 25 megabits down and 19 megabits per second up, which is broadband speeds,
right?
And then at home it's like 2 megabits down and lucky to get 1 megabit or 1 megabit per second up. So a drastic difference by a factor of 10.
Yeah.
So with flipped learning, flip instruction and the increasing popularity of videos and things, and again, especially K-12 environment with all the Chromebooks and things as well, the K-12 schools are really hitting these network, the bandwidth and broadband capability. And the more devices you add to that, just
absolutely
complicates, adds mm-hmm. to that problem. So anything you can do to offload some of that Wi-Fi back and forth is beneficial.
Yeah, between what you're using and what students have in their backpacks and pockets mm-hmm. that are using it.
Yeah. And, you know, we always talk about 1-to-1. Certainly here on campus, it's like, you know, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, 5-to-1. You know, students coming with, you know, with their mobile phone, with a tablet. It might be a small tablet. It might be an e-book reader. They'll have a laptop computer, an iPad. Where I'm already up to 5 there.
Well, don't forget in the dorms, your TVs and your gaming consoles.
Xboxes. And
absolutely. Now, comparable in price to the iPads?
Yeah, I really was looking back and forth between the new iPad mini and then this thing. Two things that put me over the top, and, you know, with, like, again, with 2 days, I think I definitely made the right decision. One, the expandable memory. It also has a USB port.
Oh, nice.
So in addition to that SD card, I've got USB capability. And then the other thing, again, this is my bias. As a teacher, I just rely on handwriting so much. As a science and math teacher, writing symbols and chemical equations, I'm just crippled if I had to rely on a keyboard or something at the front of the room. But now I can freely, you know, fits in one hand, write all the symbols and things on this. It's projected up to the front of the screen. If I write them into OneNote, I can share a view-only link with my students so they immediately have those notes. And it's kind of that full circle of learning that, you know, we're hitting them in multiple ways. So quite happy with it. So I feel a blog post coming on, so I'll be writing something up about my experiences and sharing some of the things that we've been doing with it. So all right, Cindy, what do you have?
All right, well, mine came from, you know, necessity, one of those types of things. And I was actually doing some research. And, well, two things came of it. First thing, the International Reading Association has changed its name and is now the International Literacy Association. And so they sent it out in tweets and Facebook and emails, everything. And that made me think about, wow, 15 years ago or longer, how different it would be to change the name of a major organization and to get the word out to everybody. And that, would you even want to do something like that back then? But now it's so much quicker to transition those things that it is easier to do. The purpose that I was even looking at the International Literacy Association was doing some research from the Journal of Adolescent and Adult Literacy. And as I got in and started looking at it, I was aware that they have their journals that they send out, and you can still get a paper one. And Tom, you and I talked about it. I like paper. I like having paper I can highlight and manipulate and
I can lose
just
paper
hold.
Very quick, so.
Yeah, see, and I need paper and that, and it's just learning styles and preferences.
Right.
And that, but one of the things that I noticed whenever you go now the online version of their journals, they offer like a regular version of the article, a PDF version you can print out, and then an enhanced HTML version, which is very cool. And so it's like, okay, we're sharing all this different information. It had graphics you could download.
So what does the enhanced HTML? Links and out to videos?
Right.
And
it had links. It had like the graphics. It was actually downloaded into a PowerPoint slide. And, I mean, it was just really user-friendly and that. And then they also created virtual issues because they have several different journals. And so they collected articles on, one of them I looked at was digital literacies. And so they pulled articles from The Reading Teacher, Journal of Adolescent and Adult Literacy, and I can't think of the name of the little kid. Oh, Reading Research Quarterly and The Reading Teacher. And then just their updates. And so, but it had, you know, it pulled from all of those in one nice location. And so I find I'm drawn to things like that more than real-time communities. I've tried to get in to, like, the networks and things that different groups have established. And
you mean like forums and discussion boards?
Well, like the Library of Congress has a wonderful teachers network and that. And a lot of people get on that, use that, but I just, that's not something I do easily, and I don't know why. I think sometimes because I post a question.
And if you don't get a response,
I go off somewhere else and don't.
That's not uncommon.
Don't do it. Yeah. And so I really don't get into the electronic networks and that. But I like accessing electronic resources and compilations and things like that that are available. And so I find I don't do as much communicating electronically through those networks and things like that, or forums or any of that. You know, it's still mostly email and some texting, that, you know, things like that. But, you know, still relying heavily on the information that's there.
Right. Well, and it's, again, it takes, you know, a multimodal approach for all of this. And something else, as you were talking, and just popped into my mind, so it's time for a shameless plug. We're going to be doing a conference in March.
We are.
You and I put together a proposal for just a general technology or tech talk for teachers. It's kind of more of that informal, you know, come meet. Let's do like a, almost like a panel type. Let's have some discussions on using this technology, because, you know, it's just as you were describing there, you know, people have the different learning styles and things, and we learn differently. But if we can establish some of those connections face to face, sometimes that helps us take that next step.
Right, because we had talked about doing a just a straight up presentation. And then as we talked about, we're like, you know, a lot of teachers in their districts, they have software, they have hardware that they don't know how to use, and they're not sure who to ask there. And sometimes if they're in a setting where they can bounce off teachers from other districts or other buildings and talk to each other about it, they can find out, okay, you have that, how are you using it, and things like that. Right. And so really to just encourage the conversation that hopefully will, you know, inspire them to use it. Maybe if a couple of people say, no, it's really easy, all you have to do, you know, and when you hear that, then you're like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it.
And that's one reason we started this podcast, because there's no reason, you know, that we have to wait 6 months or 12 months for a conference to come around. We're constantly sharing this. And with the advent of the video and YouTube and the ease of sharing there, that I kind of look at, you know, that flip style professional development. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's here today. Let's take advantage of these technologies, and that face-to-face time becomes very precious.
Right. And the more we do it, the easier it is. Mm-hmm. You know, there are those tasks that we do that we only do once every couple of months or whatever. And, you know, it's just like anything, your level of competency, you have to think about every step of it, because you don't do it that often.
Right.
And the more we do some of these things, the less we have to think about it, and it just becomes second nature. When you always talk about your wireless, you know, with the projector and all of that, with your, I'm sitting here listening to you with your tablet, and I'm like, I want to do that in my class, and I don't, because I haven't tried it.
Right. Well, the first step that I'm finding in talking with people, because they think, well, that's way out there in left field or whatever, that's the future. It's like, we've been doing this for 2 years consistently and reliably.
Right.
It's like, you know, there's not a technical reason. It's that mental barrier, you know, it's like
But I also feel like I need to have my own tablet, and I need to have my own so I can just do it without. It's like back in the day, you know, when we first started this grant program, we would give teachers projectors because teachers would have to sign up to get the projector for their room.
It's that ubiquity and having instant access and available.
And so it was such a, you know, planned, structured thing.
Right.
It was special. It wasn't just part of everyday instruction. Well, now you don't walk in a classroom that doesn't have a projector.
Right. And that's been planned for over the years.
Exactly. And now teachers don't even think about it. It just happens automatically. And so I think that's a big, it's the access and building that comfort level. So we're willing to do those things.
Yeah.
Because every time you talk about this, I'm like, I want to do that. I want to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid, and I don't want to look like a dope in front of my class.
It's that plan B. If this fails, I've got a failover. I can always go back to
that's
that. You've got that safety net.
That's true. And our teachers, that's what we need to teach.
Exactly.
That if it doesn't go right this time, you do something else.
Especially here in our teacher education program, where we're modeling for our pre-service students. It's like, you know, we're pushing the frontiers. We want you to go out there and use the latest, because I firmly believe it'll make you a more effective teacher.
Right.
And the world's constantly changing. We want you to leave our doors with the latest.
And we all make mistakes, because there was something we were working on in class, and I told my students something, and I found out I was dead wrong. And so the next day I sent an email, and in all capital red letters I put, I was wrong. This is the correct information.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my students stopped me and said, I've never had a professor send me an email and say they were wrong before, but it's like, you know, sometimes you just, you got to roll with it.
And that's why OneNote, I do the same thing. Or you'll in the middle of the night, you wake up, it's like, oh, I forgot to tell them that.
Right.
You know, with a OneNote notebook with a view-only link, you can just simply add that, and they instantaneously, the next time they log in, they have that available, or next time they click on that link. So, yeah, wonderful opportunities. So, all right. Thank you. All right, Mike, your last technology pick of the week.
Yes.
Oh.
And, you guys and the listeners out there don't ever know this, but I struggle every month to find a technology.
Have you changed your mind since we last spoke?
Even though you have more toys than any of us.
Right, but sometimes I get a toy and I don't get a new one for a couple months, and I'm always like, what am I going to do? But I actually came prepared for I guess that's good, for the final episode, I came prepared.
Going out on a high note.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a little more low-tech compared to what both of you would have, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say it's low-tech.
But
useful.
But very, very useful.
And actually, this was a gift for me over the holidays. And it's called Upright. And really what it is a kickstand for your device. It's small. It's about the length of, it's about the length and
your
width.
Pinky.
Yeah, a little longer than that, I would say. Well, it depends. I don't know.
She has long pinkies.
Short, stubby
your
fingers,
finger. Let's just say finger.
But yeah, it's about the size of a finger. Which is really cool, and it has this little adjustable clamp on it. And of course, it's always hard to describe these things.
It clamps onto your phone to prop it up at an angle,
right? Definitely,
or your device.
Yes, and it can do it can handle anything from 9/16 of an inch deep. So. I've used it on my iPad Mini.
Because you've got a case on your phone, so it's thicker.
Right.
And then you were able to put it on the iPad Mini. And
yep, and I'm trying
Tom's tablet that you just almost dropped on the floor.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that close.
But it is nice that you can adjust it. It's not like it's just...
You are trying to drop it.
But it's not just spongy stuff that it's supposed to fit anything and can stretch out by having that screw clamp thing.
Yeah, it's definitely like a clamp type thing, and... Yeah, it's
cool.
Tom's pick's working perfectly, fitting very easily in this.
I'm thinking at home, like with recipes and stuff.
That's one thing that's missing on that Toshiba Encore tablet is
a little kickstand.
Yeah, because I'm so used to the Surface with the built-in kickstand. That is just so handy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, this thing it came through a website called Quirky. And Quirky's kind of like a Kickstarter, except that if you get enough backing for your idea, really you just have to put out an idea that no one else has had, and you have to make sure that you've done the research for that. And if it gets enough backing, Quirky will actually develop it and get it out there and sell it. You see that with a lot of your Kickstarter programs is these people are creating a new product or a new idea, and they have no business... They don't know the business aspects that goes behind it. Soylent was one of the big ones. They got so much money and so much backing and so fast, they had no way to keep up with that, and the product was delayed, and they lost consumers for that. Mm-hmm. So with Quirky, you can do that. And then actually, Quirky actually has a display at Walmart, I noticed here.
No, I haven't seen
that.
We're kind of a smaller town,
right.
So I'm assuming some of the bigger towns, cities with Walmarts, they're going to have maybe even a bigger display. Mm-hmm. The other great thing about this kickstand is it's just not a kickstand. It's actually a stylus, which is great. So the end part operates as a stylus. And what I found was really great about this is because it's small, it fits in your pocket. And as we walk around in the cold weather and I have my gloves on, I have a way to use my phone without taking my glove off because I'm too cheap to buy the fancy gloves that let you use your touchscreen.
I like how the name of it is Upright, W-R-I-T-E.
Right.
So it's like, oh, clever.
Stylus. Yes.
Yeah.
So this one is $15, so pretty cheap, pretty easy. So really low tech, really good idea. Oh, it comes with a key ring, like a key ring. So if you want to put it on your keys or something like that, I have it off because I just wouldn't put it on a key.
You're too cool for that.
Yeah. One of these low tech. But I think the other thing is really cool is that this is just is Rene Diaz is the person's name who was invented it by, and they get a portion on the sale. Quirky gets a piece, and then I think the inventor gets a portion as well.
Okay, I'm looking at the Quirky website, which is like very cool, and that. But they it's not just tech stuff. I mean, it's all kinds of products.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be technology based.
Yeah.
It can be something you see, kind of maybe something you've been life hacking for a while. But
and you don't want to go on Shark Tank, so you go here.
Yeah, there you go.
So this product's really cool. The website's really cool. And
it's a twofer.
Yeah, I guess I have a double tech pick.
Okay. So as usual, make sure you check out our show notes, and we'll provide links to all of our technology picks out there. Thank you very much. That wraps it up for episode 173 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom,
Cindy Rich,
Mike Joya, and remember, information security is everyone's responsibility.
Keep on learning.